Welcome to the Full Tracy Monday Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:30 p.m. and that is Central Time. And today is August 4th, and Bitcoin was up about $1,600 today. So this has been a pretty orderly consolidation in the region of the upper side of this range that's been forming for the last 3 months. So it's worth considering that this is a consolidation prior to a breakout on the upside. So it's certainly something that's worth paying attention to in the near term, because we're at least starting to see some evidence that it can hold around the upper side of this range. And if it can hold the lows that were put in yesterday and today, well, then that would certainly be encouraging from the perspective of the bulls. But what I find particularly interesting right now is that we have these statements coming through from people at the Federal Reserve saying that they anticipate tapering their monetary assistance and bond buying program by November of this year. So that would withdraw liquidity from the system. Then you have the federal government, which is saying that they plan to issue less debt starting in November as well. So today we have confirmation that the Federal Reserve will certainly think more strongly about removing some of the accommodation when there are fewer bonds to buy. And realistically, what choice do they have? Because they would otherwise end up owning pretty much all of the bond market. But this is contrasting with the bounce that we're seeing in Bitcoin, because generally Bitcoin has done well when the economy is recovering and there's plenty of liquidity floating around, and that's obviously called into question if the Federal Reserve is going to be withdrawing the liquidity. So it makes this strength in here today all the more important. Of course, there's another potential interpretation, and it is that investors don't believe that the Federal Reserve is going to be in a position to attempt to withdraw that liquidity. And there is the possibility, and it might be a little early yet to reach this conclusion, but there is the possibility that what we're moving into is a stagflationary environment. And when we look at treasuries today, well, they were quite volatile. So we've had this, we had a plunge in the morning in the yield, then it popped, reversed it pretty much immediately, and then finished unchanged on the day. But nonetheless, it's unlikely that we're going to have a lot of upward pressure on the yield if the government is issuing less of them, and most particularly as we continue to be in a period of quantitative easing. And it's also worth considering that financial conditions are really quite accommodative. And we can then think about the Goldman Sachs measure. So it's shown inversely, but the most important thing is that it's still going down and it's at a new low. So based upon the data over the course of the last decade, these are the loosest financial conditions ever. And that remains a significant tailwind. So we still have loose financial conditions, but of course the markets are forward-looking. And jobs data wasn't quite as impressive as many had hoped for today. And the S&P 500 continues to range in a very inert manner. This is 9 consecutive sessions where it has been up, just pretty much up one day, down the next. And these kinds of inert patterns don't last indefinitely. Then the VIX index has been trending higher for most of the last month, and it was pretty much unchanged in here today. So if it breaks downwards tomorrow, well, then that's likely to correspond with a breakout for the stock market. But I'm a little doubtful that we're going to see that. I think it's more likely that we're going to have at least an additional pause in consolidation. And the primary reason for that is there's a lot of uncertainty still about what exactly what are the repercussions of the Delta variant, and what is likely to occur in terms of lockdowns, the various regimes that might be introduced in order to get people to social distance without actually locking down economies. I think there's a strong reluctance to lock down, particularly because vaccines remain a viable strategy to contain the infection. And Moderna was up again in here today and in a really quite impressive manner. So I think this is certainly confirmation that investors are very much on board with the mRNA vaccines, and Pfizer is pushing on to a new recovery high over this week, but was a little bit softer in here today. So this, of course, is the question. We've had massive monetary support over the course of the last year, and that was in part, well, there's no in part, it was certainly due to the fears about the pandemic. Now we're coming out the other end of that, and we've had significant asset price inflation. And then we can think about the fact that the Bitcoin sector and the cryptocurrency markets generally are doing better, and Ethereum has bounced and has broken its sequence of lower rally highs, and it's steadying here in the region of $2,500. So this is quite encouraging action. And the hard fork is tomorrow. So these sorts of events in the cryptocurrency markets are obviously now capable of attracting interest beyond the broad monetary conditions, and I think that's significant. So there are certainly individual aspects to this market that are worth considering, particularly the limited supply argument, and that will be bolstered by the hard fork in Ethereum tomorrow. Quite whether over the medium to longer term we're going to have quite as much liquidity because so much of the supply will be taken up in the proof of stake environment is perhaps a separate issue that the sector will have to overcome, but it certainly looks like it's a bullish phenomenon in the short term. And certainly, this has been quite impressive in terms of the rebound over the course of the last 2 weeks. Now, when we think about the gold markets, well, gold has been ranging now for 9 months, and it was up in a pretty dynamic manner initially in here today, but then gave up just about all of it to finish in very mildly positive territory. And this kind of action would suggest that there's still some reticence to believe that gold is ready to resume its uptrend. So we might yet see some additional pause and consolidation in here. But the bigger picture here is that when we think about gold miners, the vast majority have an all-in sustaining cost somewhere in the region of about $1,000, and some of them are considerably lower than that. And gold prices have been ranging around the $1,800 area, or at least between $1,700 and $1,900 for a year already. So miners are enjoying 100% margins, or very close to it, for a considerable period, and that's allowing them to pay down debts. It's also allowing them access to funds that they might not otherwise have had because they've got balance sheets that are flush with cash. And now the big question is, are they going to deploy that cash in the pursuit of replenishing their ore bodies? So that's basically M&A activity or exploration. Or are they going to start returning that money to shareholders in the form of dividends or buybacks? Well, we've already seen that there's been substantial dividend growth, for example, from companies like Newmont Mining, and the share was in negative territory today, in line with the volatility it's had in gold, but it raised its dividend by 161% in the last year. And it's The share price is still in the region of the peaks from back in 2011, but it's a very different company today than it was back then. So one thing that we can to think about is that it now has an enterprise value in the order of about 51 billion, and of that about 4.8 billion is in cash. But if we then go back to 2010, well, the enterprise value is considerably less, and it had about the same amount of cash, and that cash just disappeared over the subsequent couple of years. So and at the same time, the debt rose. So we've definitely seen a big change for these companies, where the debt load today might be the same as it was then, but the market cap has increased substantially, and there's been a lot of M&A activity in between. So there's certainly the potential here that we're in this range for the last year, and it's a consolidation of the region of the previous peaks, but perhaps that's all it is, just a consolidation, and that we will see higher levels being attained later. Gold is quite capable of ranging for prolonged periods, and certainly I continue to pay attention to the silver market because, as we are in the second psychological perception stage, I would anticipate that silver will lead gold and it will certainly outperform in the bullish phases. But silver continues to pause here around the trend mean and the region of the upper side of the underlying base formation. So it is still a first step above the base. Then oil prices in here today were also weaker. So I do think that as oil prices start to come back down, and these are dynamic moves, and now this is a second lower rally high, and coming back down into the region of the upper side of that underlying trading range, the consistency of this move is starting to deteriorate. If we get downside follow-through again in here tomorrow, well then we're certainly in, well, it's already done about half of the reversion to the mean, and then the big question is how much further down will it go? And a lot of that will depend on what happens in China and how much they are going to have to lock down their economy based upon their history of lockdowns and the very strict protocols that they introduce. And that's obviously going to have an effect on the oil market and oil demand. But at the other side, they're certainly attempting to support the stock market. So the CSI 300 was in positive territory in here today. And predictably, 10 Cent was also in positive territory. So this is also some evidence that the pressure that's been coming to bear on these companies, it's not intended to completely extinguish them, but rather to deter capital. And the Communist Party wants to have, I thought this was a particularly good point that Xu Li Ren made in her article yesterday, is that they want to have control over how capital is deployed. And the success of these large companies in attracting additional investment capital has been certainly something that has alarmed the Communist Party, because they want to have control over the kinds of sectors that prosper. And certainly that has to fall in line with their national priorities. Meanwhile, we can think about India, where there aren't quite the same ways of thinking about markets. And the Nifty index was up again in here today, and we're certainly starting to see that the housing development finance, and HDFC being certainly one of those types of companies, and they're starting to turn here. This was a dynamic move and certainly confirming support in the region of the trend mean in here today. So the housing development finance has been really under pressure in India over the course of the last 3 or 4 years, and it's resulted in the demise of some companies. And Yes Bank hasn't been able to break out of its base formation, or really even to confirm that this is a base formation just yet. But certainly the quantity of money that's being printed, the lower interest rates, it's positive for the banking sector. And certainly when we think about the demand for credit in a growth market like India, then it is a benign environment overall for the banking sector. And India is likely to get all the help that it requires because the world, and particularly the West, is very interested in having a competing power to China in the region. We've also seen that Japan has become increasingly vocal in its support for Taiwan because they're alarmed at the loss of autonomy that's occurred in Hong Kong. And the Nifty continues to pause here around the region of the trend mean. Of course, the Olympics are still on, and the world will be watching to see how well Japan comes through this rise in the number of cases that it's had over the last while. Certainly, we've seen that the currency markets continue to trade around based upon how well any individual country is doing with regard to the virus. The dollar index was in positive territory in here today, and this is certainly an outside day. It's not exactly a Q reversal because it didn't go down to a new low, but it's evidence of support coming through in the region of the trend mean and that psychological 92 level, or at least a round number, and betting that the USA is becoming more serious about withdrawing liquidity. And certainly, the rest of the world appears to be less likely to want to engage with that. The Australian dollar remains in a downtrend and it is trading below its trend mean. The Australian stock market, by contrast, is pushing on to new highs, and it's benefiting from the mining sector and the banking sector doing well. But it's also worth considering that a good part of that relative strength is because of the weakness of the currency. So, just over the last while, that has taxed the continued performance of the ASX 200 for foreign investors, but it now is also pushing up and through that short-term sequence of lower rally highs. When we think about the outlook for the global economy, there's a panicky environment going on right now, and I've been in a number of Zoom meetings over the course of the last 10 days, and generally as part of my our duties with the Nevada Trust Company, listening to various service providers. And one thing that's coming through, and it's been coming through for a while, and things that I've been hearing about is the considerable fashion for ESG investing. There are two things that immediately come to mind, and that set aside for a moment the difficulty that most people have in defining exactly what ESG means, because it means different things to different people. And instead, focus on the fact that how much of ESG is about technology, because you can't invest in the material sector because they pollute. And then, if you think about the drinks sector or the tobacco sector or the drugs sector, then those aren't on the table either. Certain parts of the industrial sector are because they pollute, and the energy sector aren't in there either. And then there are questions about the chemical sector. Some of them are in, some of them are out. So when one starts to really pay attention to why investors are flocking to ESG, well, is it because of the continued performance of technology? Because it's hard to argue that Google is bad for the environment. And I think that's certainly something that has helped to support investment in the sector, that they can invest in software companies, they can invest in technology, they can then put a wrapper around it and say that it is environmental, social, and governance oriented. And that's a further concentration into a sector that has already been doing well. So that has been a way of investing in technology without actually saying it's a technology or a growth fund. Or one can say that you're saving the environment because you're investing in these types of companies. So when we hear that ESG has been among the better performing sector groupings, well, a good part of the reason is because they've excised a lot of the physical world, and they're basically investing in internet companies. And then we can think about the continued, I think, hyperbole that are coming out about the climate and the urgency that's being attempted to inject into this debate. And obviously, that's a big factor for copper, but copper prices are weakening here, and this continues to look like a consolidation. And this was a pretty dynamic move over the course of the last 2 days. So we're certainly in a reversionary period here. At the same time, we get these headlines like last week that that there's so much water coming off of the Greenland ice shelf. On a single day last week, that it was enough water to cover the entire state of Florida in 2 inches of water. So that's extraordinarily alarming. And those are the kinds of statistics that people really latch on to. And of course, then, but what I find particularly interesting is that there's an increasing acceleration factor that's being introduced to the narrative, because the 2 degrees Celsius number was always the one that was used. And now people are talking about a degree and a half or a degree of a temperature rise over the course of the next century would be required to in order to avert a climate disaster. So they're certainly contracting the models, and then realistically, there's absolutely no way of decarbonizing the entire economy. We would have to completely remake the entire Chinese and Indian economies, and then build entire economies for Africa from nothing in order to do that. And there is nobody has any appetite for that kind of action. I do wonder, though, that how much of all of this rationale is based upon the desire to be energy independent. And at least that argument I can understand. So I do think that there's likely to be continued demand for copper. And I do think that this is a secular bull market because there is a clear desire, because of climate hysteria, to do something. But when we have noted people that have been advocates for climate control for years, basically saying that it's impossible to achieve the goals of mitigating climate disaster, well, surely then there's going to have to be additional infrastructure built to mitigate the effects of climate change. So more seawalls and more flood barriers, and incentives for people to move inland, and those types of things. It means massive infrastructure development. And that's beneficial for the commodity complex generally. But then there'll also be a concerted effort to try and become energy independent. So that means hydrogen, it means wind and solar, but it also means nuclear. And when we can see, for example, that the UK is moving towards producing hydrogen from spare nuclear capacity, and where China is going to spin up its first thorium molten salt reactor in the next month, and then there is a concerted effort to figure out how to get hydrogen from production to use. So there's efforts underway to try and put it through natural gas pipelines. There's efforts underway to mix it with ammonia so that it's easier to transport. That's certainly one of the efforts that Fortescue Metals is pursuing. And these are also portions of the market that should do well, but we're now in more of a corrective phase because this liquidity is being drained out of the market. There is the promise that liquidity will be drained out. And a lot of these sectors did spectacularly well in the year from the beginning or from the end of March. So now we're in more of a corrective phase. And that's why I continue to hold a short position in the S&P 500. I'm not anticipating that we're going to have more than a mean reversion because I just don't believe that the Federal Reserve is serious, that they think that they can taper assistance. But I wonder how much of a setback in the S&P 500 they're willing to tolerate before they change tack. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.